Welcome back to the Borscht Belt, everyone. This is episode 58 of the Borscht Belt Toddler Podcast, and I'm your host, Jen Stewart. I hope you're having a fun and safe summer so far. Whether you're curious about the Borscht Belt or maybe you're there right now, we hope you enjoy listening to the show that brings you stories and memories of people who worked, played, and lived in the Catskills during the Borscht Belt era. In addition to the past, we also have eyes on the future. We're looking at all the exciting things happening in the area right now. Please follow us on Instagram. Our handle is Borscht Belt Pod, and enjoy learning along with us. We're having a great time looking at some of these memories and finding all of these really cool places we can't wait to visit next year. Today, Gary Dan is here, whose family owned Shawanga Lodge, a place known for its cordial hospitality. From 1923 to 1972, Shawanga Lodge was located in Highview, New York, in a spot of rare beauty and charm. It was a perfect summer oasis. Whether you wanted to rest and relax amid luxurious surroundings or round-the-clock entertainment with something doing every minute, there was something for everybody, and all were welcome. Please enjoy this interview with Gary Dan.
My name is Gary Dan. My family was involved in the Catskill Hotels from the very, very beginning up until the end, really in 2008. My great-grandfather was a plumber. He started with the Morningside Hotel. He came here, he was born in 1875 in Russia, and he came to the United States in 1890 with his wife, Lena, who was my great-grandmother. And I'm not sure when he started the Morningside Hotel. Now, the Morningside Hotel is in Hurleyville. It's now the Morningside Park.
Oh, no way. Okay.
Yeah. And it's right down the road from Brickman's.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Everything's connected.
Yeah. So my great-grandfather, Abraham Danishevsky. So he bought Shawanga in 1921. From a man named Carpenter, D.G. Carpenter. When he bought the hotel, it said no Hebrews allowed on the brochure.
Interesting.
And if you look on the website, I have the website, shawanga.com. I actually have the 1920 brochure from D.G. Carpenter, and my father highlighted where it says no Hebrews allowed.
Wow.
And then a year after, when my grandfather owned the hotel, it said kosher table. And that's it. I have that brochure also. It's a 1921 brochure. It's on the website.
Yeah. And it really bugs me too when people, and I've been seeing a lot of this lately, because there's been a few announcements with, like, they're making a new Dirty Dancing, and, you know, leave it to the internet for, you know, people who just don't understand what the Borscht Belt was to be like. They said that the Borscht Belt was for rich Jewish families. And I'm like, no. Well, some of the people who went there were rich, and some of them were, and a good majority of them were Jewish. But the reason why these places started was because they weren't allowed anywhere else at the time.
Yeah. If you look at the 1934 Catskill Guide, which is on the website also, my father scanned it all. My father scanned all, he had about 1,100 pictures and everything there, and he scanned everything, and I put it up there.
Amazing.
And you'll see little subtle hints in some of the hotels where it says a church nearby, or it'll say kosher. So it's telling you whether or not you can come or not.
Right. Yeah. I guess that would be the sign of the times, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so my father was a kid. He grew up, the hotel was open in the summers only. He grew up in the summers, just like I grew up at Shawanga when I was a kid. My sister also grew up there also. I had a lot of cousins that were all up there, and we spent our summers up there. My father spent his summers as a young man, as a teenager, up there working. And eventually So Abraham, oh, this is something else interesting that I found out. My grandfather, Abraham Van, I always knew he died young because I saw the gravestone. And what I didn't know until I went to the Sullivan County Historical Society, and we did a genealogy search, and then we also did a newspaper search, is that the year after he bought the hotel, he was at breakfast. Everybody said he was happy, and they found him hung in the he hung himself in the
You were
nightclub.
telling, so this was your grandfather?
Yeah.
Oh my
I never
gosh.
knew that. I never knew that. Nobody ever talked about that. I mean, back then there was probably much more of a stigma to oh, your grandfather hug himself. Oh.
Oh
And
my God.
I
So
never knew
you
that.
don't even know why
Yeah.
that nobody ever talked about it, eh?
Yeah, I knew my grandmother. She was the older woman sitting in the lobby of Chiwaga who always called me, got my name wrong all the time. She was
No.
bald. And I don't know how when they bought the hotel, they purchased it with I think it was Cooper Smith. Yeah, so Cooper, this other guy, Cooper Smith, bought the hotel with my great grandfather. And after he hung himself, I mean, it was 1 year after the after they bought the hotel. I don't know how they ran the hotel for a little bit, but they did.
They made
Because
it work. Yeah.
my great grandfather had three children. I think one was an older teenager and the other was in their low 20s. My grandfather was one of them and he became an eye doctor. And then there was Sam, that was Julius Dan. Sam Dan and May Dan, his daughter, ended up running the hotel. I'm not sure when they got into it because Sam Dan went to law school and then gave up law school to be a ho to run the hotel full time. Yeah, well, full time in
Yeah.
the summers. And May Dan, she was at the hotel till the very end. I remember her fondly. She was a really nice lady. She was a cashier at the hotel.
Oh, wow. So it really was a
Yeah.
family affair.
So somehow along the line there, they ran the hotel. They bought out Cooper Smith, and then so they just ran the hotel. May Dan married a man named Ed Atlas, and his son and my father were the ones that ran the hotel from 19 middle 50s on.
Where what was so special about and it was is it Chiwanga
Chiwanga is both.
or Chiwanga?
It's named after the Chiwanga Mountains. It's an Indian
Okay.
name. It's an Indian name. And if you want to see something really inappropriate these days, look at the old sign coming into the
I
hotel. It says,
saw.
"This
Yeah,
is
and I'm
Reed
like
Hotels."
so what, 'cause you told me I could use these photos and I'm posting them and I'm like, "No, we're just going to do it anyways because it's a part of history, and if people get upset, you can just my whole thing is ask for forgiveness, not for permissions. So
Yeah.
which might get me into trouble, but it's important for people to understand that, we're so quick to hit that cancel button, but these were products of their time, right? So
Well, if you want to go down that route, the nickname for Chiwanga was Shvanga Lodge.
I saw that. Can
It's
you
a
tell
Yiddish
everybody what
for
that
pregnant.
means? That's
It's a Yiddish for pregnant because it
what
was a
I
thing that
thought.
was
I
like
was like, this is a Yiddish word. I'm gonna have to look this up. And then when I looked it up, I was howling.
Yeah, the
So
hotel had quite a reputation, and it was changed into a family hotel in the renovations of 1958.
what was it like? What were the rooms like? How many people how big was it?
Okay, so it's about 230 rooms in 1970s. If you look at the aerial picture, that's I have a high resolution aerial picture on the website that was used to make the postcard. And if you're looking at the hotel from the front, there's the main building. The main building had the third floor was mostly bath on the floor, the inexpensive rooms. There was, yeah. So we'll back up a little bit. So the original main building, where the original building that they built, that they bought the hotel in 1921, that building burned down in 1926. There was a spark from the chimney lit the roof on fire
Oh
and
my
the hotel
goodness.
burned. They rebuilt the building in 1933, but for those years in between, what they ended up doing, they had cottages, which were still there in 1970s. They had cottages, they still had the casino, which is the playhouse, and they cooked and served meals in the casino slash playhouse, same thing. They had the cottages, and that was it. They had a, I don't know this for a fact, but I think there used to be a building that was a bowling alley. It's in the 1920-1921 brochure.
No
way.
They
have a picture of the guy at the end picking up the pins and putting it in, and a woman in an old dress and in the bowling alley. I suspect when they lost the main building, they needed more rooms. They converted that building into rooms.
Yeah, I read that they were sleeping in the attic at one point.
Yeah, that was later on. That was that was in the 50s.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what George told me. because we used to go up in the attic, and I said, hey George, how come there are mattresses? And these also, they had slugs, what we called slugs. It was fake quarters. I said, why are there mattresses up in the attic? And why does it say Ritz above the attic door? He said, oh yeah, when the attic was filled, they put single men up there.
Okay, fair.
Okay, and they still had the mattresses up there, and when we were kids up there.
Fair.
Yeah. Yeah. So I believe they converted that bowling alley into rooms, which when they in 1950 they built a newer building there, and they called the building Holiday Inn. It was before the Holiday Inn motel chain. It was named after my aunt. What a cousin of mine told me that they named it after a movie called Holiday Inn.
Yeah.
Which was before our time. When they built that newer building, they moved that building, that old guest house, into the back of the hotel and made that staff housing. It was called West Point.
Yeah.
And so if you're facing the hotel, you're looking at the main building. It was an older, really older building built in 1933. Nowadays, it would be people would look at that and go, oh my God, I really want to go there. It's this old, beautiful building.
Is it gone? It's all gone.
Yeah. On the left of it would have been the newest building they built in 1958, which was called Panorama, and it had a spectacular view just like the lobby. You could look out the lobby windows and see for about 50-60 miles of the rolling hills and mountains. And down the hill there was the outdoor, there was the playhouse, and they had a coffee shop down there, a bar, an outdoor amphitheater,
which looked like the Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah, but a lot smaller.
I know. It almost looked like a fairy tale from the postcard.
Yeah. And to the right of the main building, there was that building, Holiday Inn. The outdoor pool was across from the Holiday Inn. The outdoor pool was built in 1934. And before that, they swam in the lake. People swam in the lake. The lake, if you look in the aerial picture, you'll see the lake there. And it's a natural spring lake, very clean. I remember I was up there one time in the, I think it was in the 90s, and so there were some other people up there. I took my Jeep up there, and I was looking around, and some people said to me, how come there's no fish here? And I said, well, that's because they took the water for the cottages from the lake. They pumped it into this building called Skytop. It was chlorinated when it came out of the lake. And then, in the rooms in the cottages, it said, don't drink the water, because it was water.
I saw that.
Yeah. So one year the filters backwashed and put chlorine into the lake and killed all the fish.
Oh.
But some people have seen, I think some guy I talked to, they said they restocked the lake. So there's fish there now.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So, To the right, there was Holiday Inn, the pool across from there. And then up a little hill, there was handball courts, paddleball courts, basketball, volleyball. There were the cottages. The cottages, some of them had a shared bath, some of them had private bath. It was a mixture. Mm-hmm. The cottages all had above ground piping. And being kind of devilish little kids, would sometimes, after we had our dinner and the adults were getting ready for their dinner, we would go there and turn off the hot water and then turn it back on and see if anybody said anything in the shower.
That's funny.
I told my dad that years later.
Okay, good thing, years later.
Yeah, tennis courts. They had clay tennis courts there. I think if I look at the aerial photo, it's six of them, a baseball field, and then there was a road that went up the hill in the back, and there was a camp back there. The camp had its own pool, and then you went down a hill a little bit and there was a lake.
What's your earliest memory of Shawanga?
being in camp, being around the hotel, the lobby.
Can I age you? How? just for point of reference.
Well, I'm 60.
Okay, you're 60. Okay.
Yeah. So I was, there's a picture in the hotel of when they're doing the construction in the winter of 1957 for the 58 season with my mom there, and she's pregnant with my sister.
Oh, okay.
that year, they had to stay at the hotel that whole winter when they were doing all the construction. And my mom and dad stayed in their little cottage. They had a space heater and no water for the whole winter.
Oh my gosh.
And that's when she was pregnant with my sister, and they were redoing a lot of stuff. So basically, like I said, in 1950, they built the Holiday Inn building, made the casino bigger and made that nicer. And if you look at the colors there in the photos, it's very 1950s.
Yeah.
1958, they expanded the lobby. The original lobby had a wood floor, and it was very old looking. If you look at the pictures, it was really old looking. It had the covered porch and the big deck in the front because there was no air conditioning back then. So people were on the front porch, and if it was raining out, you were in the covered porch. They expanded the lobby over that whole deck. They enclosed the porch. They made one porch on the left side, a teen dining room, and the one on the right side was like a card room and other things like that.
Yeah.
And the lobby, there's actually a picture in the website that shows from almost the same position, the lobby from 1940 and the lobby from in the 1970s. So it's interesting to see that.
Just to see the evolution of it.
In the picture from 1940, there's some old chairs there. My father told me that they bought those chairs as antiques in 1930s.
Oh, wow.
And when they renovated the lobby, it just didn't fit in with the beautiful decor of plastic furniture. And
okay.
So they
right.
put those chairs on either side of the elevators going on each floor. And my Uncle Alvin had those chairs for many years. And then he gave them to my father. And I have three of them in my house here. My sister has two or three, and my mom has four.
Oh, that's cool.
And those chairs in the lobby. In 1930s.
Is your mom still around?
Yes.
Oh, Canada horror. Good. That's good. That's
yeah.
great.
So let's see, where were we? So they expanded the lobby. They made a lower lobby, or before they had a lower lobby, it was just basically a crawl space with dirt floor. They had bulldozers, there's pictures of the bulldozers digging it deeper, and they had to pour cement. In the lower lobby, there's a lot of pictures of the lobby, but only one picture of the lower lobby. So when you went down the stairs or the elevator to the lower lobby, you came out and there were two rooms across. One was a dance studio and one was originally a teen room, mm-hmm. or something like that. And there were no windows in the room. And if you closed the door, it was so dark that on rainy days, we would actually close the door and play hide and seek in there. But you could stand in the middle of the room and nobody would see you because it was so dark, and you could just slowly tiptoe around the person looking for you.
That's so scary. That would give me such anxiety. But
if you went to the left, there were four or five phone booths. They're made out of wood phone booths. On the left side was a place to sit, and then a jukebox. There was a canteen, which was basically a coffee shop.
It must have been a paradise as a kid growing up, just to have this.
Yeah.
Where did you grow up? Did you even though it was only there for summers, did you live there all year round, or?
No, we lived 20 minutes away in Middletown.
Okay.
And in the wintertime, my father would book conventions for the opening season because the hotel would open before the summer season started when kids got out of school, and he would have senior citizen conventions come up, and then he would prepare all that in the winter. And then when the kids went back to school, the hotel was open until about October and September, October. And then he would do senior citizen conventions then also. And so we would pack the car at the last day of school and drive up there and then go back home at the last day right before school started.
Yeah, so much fun. So what was a typical day like there as a kid?
Well, we had a little cottage that we lived in. My parents had the back room. We had the front room. There was a connecting sink in the middle and a bathroom off to the side. And we would get up in the morning. We'd go to the CDR, Children's Dining Room, it was called. Now, the camp was about a half a mile away, so they had a little bus. There were two buses. One was called the Magic Bus. It was basically an old school bus. And the other one was, it said Chan's Charter Service on the side. And that was my favorite one because it had air brakes.
And oh, fun.
My dad would, I would sit on my dad's lap and he would drive, we at the end of the day.
He'd let you drive.
And we'd drive around the back of the hotel. And I'd be saying, Dad, you're going too fast. He told me years later, whenever I said that, he went faster.
Nice.
So we would walk over to the children's dining room. It would be, go behind Holiday Inn building, past the nursery on the right side, have our breakfast. And then my parents lost track of what we were doing. And we were... So all the kids got in the bus to go to camp. We missed it. And then we walked slowly to camp. And then we'd hide behind the bushes and watch them because they did. We called it chicken fats. I have no idea why, but it was basically calisthenics in the morning. So we skipped that. As soon as that was over, we just came out of the woods and we joined the campers. A lot of times there was always water leaking out from the pool up above there. So we made a dam out of mud.
Oh, fun.
And that we would spend our day building the dam up, filling it up with water, then breaking it. It would flood the swing set. And then the camp director would get mad at us. But we did a lot of that. Every once in a while, for some reason, we would just start running. We jump over, we run through the from the older kids section into the little kids section, jump over the fence behind the sandboxes and into the woods. The counselors would chase us, but it was hopeless for them because they didn't know the woods that good. and then we would run into the woods, and I mean, we were eight. We did this from like 8 years old to 11.
Wow.
And our parents had no idea we were walking along a mountainside, 200 on, well, the hotel was 250 acres, but it was thousands of acres of land. And we would go up to the, what we called sky top sometimes. Yeah. And you could see, look over to Wurtsboro Airport down in the bottom of the hill. And we knew not to go down the hills because at that time there were old lead mines and mine shafts going down. And you could actually fall down into the shaft. But we knew where all those sections were. And we stayed away from it.
Yeah.
And you could see the water tower from there, from the hotel. So we always knew where the hotel was. And we always found our way back.
Yeah.
But our parents had no idea that we had 8-year-old kids walking along the mountainside.
It's just a different time too.
We told them later on, like 20 years later.
Okay. Well, that's good.
But we couldn't get in trouble anymore. And then.
What was the wishing well? I saw the wishing well. Can you talk about what that's about?
It was there. It was there before I was born. And there was a water fountain that kind of worked and didn't work in there. And, It was just a water fountain, basically.
Oh, it was just a water.
Yeah.
It looked like this magical thing, and I saw like a photo of people gathering around it, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, I guess somebody at some point thought it was something a little bit better. Who knows?
Just kind of make it a bigger deal.
Yeah, but the building next to it was called the Grotto, and look at the brochure in 1920, it was there.
Okay.
And cool. I think somebody sent me a postcard from the early 1900s, and it was there also.
Do you remember some of the entertainers who performed at Chiwaga? Or?
We never went to the shows as kids, and my mom never went either because she had little kids. And after dinner, we would come back, and they put us to bed, and my mom would probably go up and knit with my aunt.
And, okay.
But we did see one time Tiny Tim. He was a headliner one time, and I got to go backstage and shake hands with him, which I thought was a big deal. And Norm Crosby opened for him back then. My cousin and I thought he was the funniest guy around.
Yeah. And,
even at the Raleigh, we were at the Raleigh late years later. I never really went to the shows. I worked the spotlight there though.
Yeah. So yeah. So when did you realize that it was starting to slip away? Because it closed when you were still a kid, right? Or
yeah, I remember the my uncle Alvin. He had a business in Florida, and he was interested in getting out of the business, and my father couldn't do it by himself, and. They still had a big mortgage on the buildings, yeah. And they knew that they had to, they had a lot of work to modernize. Sam Dan and Ed Atlas didn't put a whole lot of money back into the hotel.
Yeah.
So in the 40s and early 50s, they should have been, in the 50s, there should have been no rooms with a bath on the floor. They should have had, and they should have been thinking about opening all year round in the late 50s. They would have had to build an indoor pool. They would have had to enlarge every room in the main building. So that means make single rooms into, take two or three rooms into one room, all bath on the floor.
Probably no more sleeping in the attic.
Yeah, no more sleeping in the attic. and it would have cost a fortune.
Yeah.
So the hotel went into auction, and my father tried to help the next owner start, but he started too late. And the hotel, quote, burned.
Quote, burned. So
the water tower was emptied.
Yeah.
My friend's father was the county fire commissioner, and he told me that they went over to the guy and said to him, if you drop the insurance case, we'll drop the investigation. And that's how it ended.
Okay. All right.
I remember I was in fifth grade then, and when it was in the newspaper that the hotel burned down. And I'd always thought I wanted to follow my dad's footsteps. And when the hotel burned, I knew that was never going to happen.
Yeah, that must have been hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Because you even talk about going back there a year later.
Yeah, yeah.
That probably wasn't an easy thing to do.
I don't know, it was kind of fun because it was before the hotel burned. I was telling you earlier that most fathers would take the Boy Scout troop hiking in the woods and make some beef stew or something like that.
Yeah.
My father took us into the hotel trespassing. And what we did was he took us up there, our whole Boy Scout troop there, and we climbed in through the basement window in the that went into the guest laundry room.
Oh, wow.
And we were spent a few hours running around the hotel, looking in the kitchen and all around the place. And then finally my dad said, oh, time to go home. And I said, I'm going to grab a box of brochures, Dad. And he said, no, we'll come back another day. And I didn't listen to him. I grabbed the brochures and ran over and followed them out. And 3 days later, the hotel burned down. Everything was lost.
Good for you for doing that.
We still have those brochures. I have a pretty much 3/4 of a box of brochures in mint condition.
Okay. Well, hang on to those.
Yeah, I also have a Schwaga Lodge athletic staff shirt.
Do you have? Yeah, I'd really like a jersey. One of those basketball jerseys, please.
Oh, my father has that jacket in the picture. He saved everything. That's why I have all these pictures. He saved everything. It was so much fun on rainy days, and sitting in his office closet, digging through all the interesting things there.
I'm sure.
In his desk, he had a water gun. I said, Dad, why do you have a water gun? In there, he said the rooms in the main building had what's called a transom window, because in the old days they didn't have air conditioning, so you close your door, open up this transom window, and then they'd open the doors at the end of the hallways to get some ventilation.
Yeah.
But sometimes the parents would come back from the show and kids falling asleep leaning against the door, or they locked the door. They couldn't get it open. So my father stood up in the transom window and squirted them with a gun.
Oh my God.
The kid would wake up and they get the parents back in the room.
Oh my goodness. Well, whatever works, right?
Mm-hmm.
So after the hotel closes, how does your dad get the job at DeVille?
I don't know.
Oh, you don't know? Okay.
You got it.
Yeah. Okay. So that was good.
Yeah. Oh, well, I wanted to mention to you with the canteen in the lower lobby. It was like a coffee shop, and in the back they had those big hair drying things for women.
for the beauty parlor. Yeah, because yeah, they had like beauty contests and
yeah, and there were three pinball machines there. And Artie and Flo, I think their last name was Silverman or Silver something, ran the place. And behind there was the guest laundry room, because you know a lot of guests came up for they came up for the whole summer. They were season's guests.
So this came up in conversation because I don't know if you've been following along in what's been happening in Ellenville, but there's this property company that's, you know, they're putting in a proposal for the Neville-y and redoing. It's actually beautiful what they're planning on doing. And someone mentioned in my comments, you know, but how expensive were these places? You know, people back then vacationed differently. So can you talk a little bit about sort of the cost? Because when you say families, you know, would come and spend a whole summer there, what would that be, I guess, equivalent to today? I mean, okay, even so though.
While you're talking, I just opened up the rate schedule for.
Amazing. Okay, perfect.
it's and I put and I said, look here. So third floor main building, which was bath on the floor, was $13 a day, $55 a week, which include three meals a day.
So $55 a week.
And if you do the inflation calculator, that's $552 a week in 2021.
Okay. There's an inflation calculator. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. And the most expensive rooms were $21 and $75.
So $500 a week is still pretty, like, that's good
per person. I believe it's per, let's see here. Look at the brochure here. It says each person, that's, so that's per person, three meals daily. And there's special rates also. Is that, so there's rates for the family without the father and the father on the weekend.
Right, because that's how it would go.
Yeah, and this 1953 brochure, they still had horseback riding at the hotel. So it says free horseback riding Monday through Friday, individual to group dance lessons. Better choice of accommodation, honeymoon cottages. They had an orchestra and all that stuff. And yeah, so, and it depended on where you faced. If you faced the back of the hotel, well, it was a cheaper room.
Yeah, exactly. And, but there were people who did spend their entire summers.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
My sister actually just met one of the people yesterday, I think yesterday, the day before, Kessler, who used to be, their family were season's guests at the hotel. And my sister actually went out to dinner with one of the guy, Kessler boys.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Yeah, I just remember them from the dam. We didn't really play with guests that much in the hotel. We had so many cousins.
Right.
But the Kesslers, my older cousins knew them and they made mud for the dam. It was called Kessler's Mud.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, so after we would go back to the hotel in the bus and have lunch and then take the bus back to the hotel, back to the camp, I mean.
Yeah.
And then after camp, sometimes if we ran away from camp, what we would do is when we saw the bus coming along, we would hide behind some trees. And when the bus came out, left, we would come out from behind the tree and our parents thought we got off the bus.
That's the clever, very clever.
And then the staff had dinner at 5 in what was the children's dining room / staff dining room.
What was the food like? How was the food at Chiwanga?
The food at all the Catskill hotels was fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, at Chiwanga, our favorite meal was, we had chicken chow mein. We had counselor's portions.
Chicken chow mein at a Borscht Belt hotel.
Yep. Kenny Lee was the chef.
Amazing. So it was authentic chicken chow.
Yeah. And the
so it wasn't kosher.
The Raleigh chef, his name was Harry Fu. And he didn't make chow mein though. But yeah, so we would have our after dinner, for example, we would go down. There was a bakery. The hotels of the Raleigh had a bakery. The Chiwanga had a bakery. The bakery at Chiwanga was located behind the main building underneath the children's dining room. So after dinner, we would, not all the time, but often we would go down to the bakery and they were making fresh stuff. Everything was, the hotel was fresh.
Wow.
Everything was made to order fresh. The staff ate the either one day old or sometimes same day food. It depends. But yeah. It was also, and then the kitchen staff and the other like porters and stuff like that, they eat 3 day old food. What George Paradise told me is that my Uncle Alvin, the guys who delivered the food to the hotel, he said they got 4 day old food. If I said, if I feed them, they're not going to steal from me.
Well, he's right.
Yeah. So there's nothing wrong with 4 day old food. I mean, leftovers are great.
Leftovers are great for sure.
And then after the bakery, we would go to my grandmother's cottage and have Nana time, and she would give us candy, and she didn't know we went to the bakery before.
Oh, I know. So you get like double up on the sweets.
Yeah. Sometimes we would go to camp at night after that, and other times we would go down and we would play in the lower lobby. There was towards the late 60s or in 70, and definitely in the 70s, they would sometimes have a rock band play in the lower lobby.
Yeah, I noticed that there was like a teen rock band.
Yeah, no, but this, they would have a band come in just for like a big band come in.
Oh, okay.
Down there. And I remember one time the singer, some girl, she wanted my cousin and I to come up and sing with them. And we went up down the stage, and I think my cousin sang something, and I just sat froze. I just froze solid.
Oh.
And if you went out from, if you went to the right from the elevators, there was a wine cellar down there for the, and then you went into the big room where the brochures show the lower lobby. If you went to the right there, you went through some slotted doors. And by the way, the lower lobby is often where the cocktail parties were held. And those are such good food there. Oh.
Yeah. What do you remember about those cocktail about the cocktail parties?
The little Jello and the egg rolls and the different things. And
oh, sounds like a very 50s, 60s food.
Oh, yeah. But if you went through those, doors, there were some slatted doors that you went through there. That's where the lobby, that's where the basement became the old basement, where it was a dirt floor. And there were so many things back there. I remember there being an old piano back there, and it looked exactly like the piano that's in one of the pictures in the 1930s.
Right.
And there was some old pinball machines that were some type of upright pinball machine. They were were made out of wood. And we used to play with those a little bit, and there was lots of stuff stored down there. If you went to the right, the ceiling started getting a little bit lower, and there was no light, and it got a little scary. So we didn't. I only dug back there once because I was too scared to go back again. And then if you went way towards the back, that's where they had the maintenance shop, and Tony Pernice ran maintenance.
Yeah.
And Tony Pernice was I think he's probably in his 60s back then. He looked a little older. His wife's name was Lena. They lived in a little rock made house up the street from Shawanga. Not the first one, the second one, if anybody's looking.
Okay.
Which is probably still there. And there was another guy named Freddie Push. Those are the two guys I knew from maintenance. And they called him Freddie Push because Freddie would say, just push it a little bit.
Okay.
Everything, just push it.
Yeah.
And Tony was really good to us kids. And I remember he made us a little go-kart out of an old lawnmower.
Oh.
I think it was either my cousin Robbie or my cousin Mark when I...
How many cousins do you have? Like, how big is the family?
Well, at the hotel, we probably had... there were the kids there. The kids that were there all summer was probably 2, 3, 4, 7, or 8.
That's so nice. Yeah.
And then there were some other cousins that came up periodically.
Yeah.
It was either my cousin Robbie and my cousin Mark and I, we talked one of the bellhops, or not bellhops, one of the busboys or waiters into tying a hose behind his car on the hitch and pulling us in that little go-kart. And he was pulling us around. They had a dump in the bottom down by the back of the hotel. He was pulling us around circles in the dump and
so getting dirty was never an issue with between the mud and the trips around the dump and This wasn't for the faint of heart.
Yeah, just as he was pulling us around, the thing tipped over. He stopped, he got up. I look up, and there's my father, Tony, and Freddie Push coming in the Jeep and in one of the hotel vans, driving down the road pretty quick. Because they were kind of mad that we were doing this. I bet the busboy waiter, I bet he thought he was going to be fired, but he wasn't.
Oh, that's good.
Trouble, though. And I was sitting in a Jeep going back with my dad. He had a 1940s Willys Jeep.
I saw that. That's cool.
So we were going back, and after we got in trouble and from doing that whole thing with the lawnmower, go-kart, whatever it was, whatever you want to call it.
And, yeah.
And I said, Dad, can I steer? Oh, silence. Is it okay?
How old were you when the hotel closed? Do you remember?
11.
11, yeah. So your dad ended up going to work for the DeVille, which you talked a little bit about. And I was looking at photos of the DeVille. Can you talk a little bit about the DeVille?
Yeah, so Frank Prinny, it was used to be that it was the Nemerson Hotel. It was just like a 5-minute drive from the Pines. And Frank Prinny's to Lenny Schindler bought the hotel. They had no idea how to run a hotel. They'd never done that. I don't know how my father found out about all that, but he got the job managing and doing conventions there.
That's good.
And the DeVille was open in the summer only also. They had an indoor pool. They still had some bath on the floor and some of the rooms in the main building, not many. The DeVille really typified the older Catskill construction ways, and because if there was a fire, he didn't want to lose everything. So the DeVille had the main building, it had its cottages, the dining room and kitchen were a separate building.
Yeah.
And the nightclub was another separate building.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So my father did that for about 3 years. We were at the DeVille, and we lived in the back of the hotel there. One of my cousins brought a mobile home and put it in the back of Chihuahua. And my dad bought the mobile home from my uncle and brought it to the DeVille and to the Raleigh.
Oh, and, smart.
So it was a nice little thing there.
Yeah.
And we had that there, the DeVille. The DeVille also had, it was 2 meals a day.
And so that's what we call the modified American.
Modified band. American.
The band. Modified, yes.
They put a little extra work into the coffee shop so that you can buy nice lunches and there. They had really nice steak sandwich lunch there you can get.
Wow.
But the DeVille was more of a plainer hotel. It just didn't have the character that Chihuahua did. It was on a piece of land, and you saw some houses around it. People living there, and residential houses, not you can see it from the paddleball courts in the pool. And it just didn't have, it wasn't on top of a mountain with this beautiful Alps view and stuff like that.
It must have been hard to I'm sure that must have been really hard for your dad to have this hotel in his family for his entire life, and then to have to make that transition. That couldn't have been an easy thing for sure. But from DeVille, he went to the Raleigh, which he spent 30 years, right?
Well, he went to, he was at the Pines and Laurels for a very short amount of time until he got a nice job at the Raleigh. The one funny thing that happened at the DeVille one is that because the hotel never had a liquor license in the beginning, they had it later on. So that's a lot of money. So they had to cut back in other areas. So for example, they didn't serve bagels and lox in it for breakfast because it's expensive, and they had an open bar. And there was one waiter, his station was up in the front of the dining room, and his guest had asked for lox, bagels and lox. And he said, okay, hold on. He got in the car, he used to work at the Pines. He got in his car, he drove over to the Pines, put his old Pines jacket on, went in the kitchen, got bagels and lox, got back in his car and drove back to the DeVille and served him.
That's commitment.
Now, all the hotel owners, they all knew each other. And the owner of the Pines, I think his name was Jerry Ehrlich. He was over having.
I interviewed Cliff Ehrlich.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, I heard that one. Yeah, that was right. I heard that one.
Yeah.
And he was over at the DeVille, so my father told him the story. He had a good laugh.
I can't wait to. should I forward your info to Cliff so he can collect on the Lux?
Yeah, we all from what, Vegas or Lux. Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. Mm-hmm. And then, so after these, you know, stints at Pines and Laurels, because that was the thing too, you know, there was work for people. Mm-hmm. So talk to me about the Raleigh, because it sounds like he had a really nice run there.
Yeah, so the Raleigh, you know, it was owned by Manny Halbert, George Gilbert, and they knew my dad was doing conventions, and they wanted to add more to that. So they hired him as a manager and doing conventions. Sid Zulkin was the manager then. He was more of a night manager. And so my father started there. And
do you remember what year that was? Or
probably 1973.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was too young to work back then. So I did odd jobs. I did the spotlight. I did night patrol, babysitting.
But you really just wanted to be there, I think, from the get-go. Nice.
I did the switchboard. I mean, they didn't care. It's like, oh, this kid's going to do it. So good. I don't have to do the switchboard. Now, do you know what a switchboard is?
It's way back when. it was for the phones, right? To connect people to the rooms.
Yeah, it wasn't until I think it was the early 2000s that the Raleigh got rid of their switchboard and put a digital system in.
No, 2000.
But Shawanga had a switchboard also. My cousin Michael's told me he used to operate the switchboard.
Where you have to connect them to the proper. Yeah.
Yeah, I did the Raleigh switchboard.
I remember my phone had a rotary. That's how far back I can go.
Yeah, so the phone. When you had a switchboard, you had house phones around the building, around the hotels.
Yeah.
And you had a phone in your room that had nothing on it. You just pick it up and it buzzed. And you had to wait for the switchboard operator to say hello. And you might say to them, oh, could I have the room so-and-so, room 23 or can you connect me to the nightclub or dining room?
Yeah.
So what you do as a switchboard operator, you say, hold on, you plug in the plug for the dining room or nightclub or let's say there was a guest room, and you flip a switch and ring the bell. If you wanted to be obnoxious, you just hold the switch and just let the thing ring and ring. And if somebody was there, they'd pick up and you'd say, oh, I have a call from room blah, 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 or someone from a house phone. And then you'd patch them in together. And then you wait for the lights to go dead and you disconnect them.
That's great.
They had PA systems also. So you might pick up a house phone and say, can you page so-and-so? And you page. I never paged anybody because it was nighttime when I did it, and they didn't do paging at nighttime.
Yeah. So did they still have their famous Mambo nights at the Raleigh?
Oh yeah.
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 So what was that like?
The Mambo nights. Well, they were Monday nights in the summer only. George Gilbert ran the entertainment side of the Raleigh Hotel. And the early show, I think, ended around 11 o'clock or so.
Yeah.
And then the band, there was a disco band, Face to Face. They played in the beginning and for the first hour or so. And
I saw Face to Face. I wonder where those guys are now.
Yeah. Yeah, so they played, I think, probably from about midnight till 1 a.m. And then there was a comedian, and then they had the dancing show, the Mambo Night. Fayola was the one that ran that show. I have no idea if that was her real name or last name.
What was her name?
Fayola.
Fayola.
Fayola, yeah.
Okay.
But the dancing back, the Mambo dancing was pretty much what you saw in the movie Dirty Dancing when they were dancing at the Lock Sheldrick. It was like that.
Yeah.
And then I often didn't stay for the show. I'd end up going out. I'd stay for Face to Face and do your dancing. And then I usually go out and do stuff with some friends.
Yeah. Did you go to the, so I noticed the chalet at the Pines.
Yeah, we went there. When I was old enough to go there, it was they were more of the B-52s and that type of music, that punk rock. Nice.
Fun.
The chalet was a great time.
That's what I keep hearing, that it was fun. It was a lot of fun there.
There was also, I think it was in probably 82, 83, maybe 80, 81, they had a Music on the Mountain, and they had bands come up and play. I think I saw the Allman Brothers, or it was either the Allman Brothers or what was the other band? The Doobie Brothers, maybe. One of those two I saw. I think, I don't remember which one it was.
So this was like way after Woodstock.
Oh yeah, way after.
Yeah. But this was music. Interesting. That's so cool.
Yeah.
How they try to do that. And then you started working not full time at the Raleigh, but you were there for.
Yeah, I started out as a bellhop. I learned to drive stick shifts whenever there was stick shift, the car hops let me drive that down. When I first started, I wasn't old enough to work the nights. So when I was old enough, they gave me all the night shifts.
Nice.
The working as a bellhop was fun. I think one of my more favorite parts was they used to have somebody stand at the end of the lobby and direct people to the show. And my friends would hang out there, and some of the girls, and Sid Zolkin would come by and say, "Get these girls out of here," with a big smile on his face.
Oh, because they liked you in the
Yeah. And I remember one time there was a big check-in, check-out, a big check-in and check-out of the Raleigh might be like 800 people leaving and coming at the same day.
Oh my God.
So you were busy. If you worked the 11 to
and this 3, was in, sorry. And just to, because again, you know, people like to say that there was this decline, but this was in the 70s when this amount of people were checking in, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
In the 80s, the hotel was booming.
Really?
Yeah, it was the hotel was packed, full house, every weekend, every week for the entire summer. Before the summer season started with senior citizens, my dad kept that hotel filled. And afterwards, he kept the hotel filled.
But they were summers only, Raleigh, right?
No, Raleigh was all year round.
Oh, they were all year round. Okay.
Yeah, I remember when we first left Chuanga, and we were going to the DeVille for the first time. You on Thompsonville Road, you passed the Raleigh. And I looked out the window and said, "Wow, look at that hotel! Look at that indoor pool." And
you got to work there, yeah. So, what was your favorite part of bellhopping, or working there at the Raleigh?
Well, bellhopping was fun. Well, I could tell you my favorite type of group that came in. That was the Firemen's Convention.
Talk to me about the Firemen's Convention.
They brought more booze than luggage.
Okay. Was this the local fire department?
It was New York State.
Okay, nice.
And they filled all the hotels. It was the Concord, the Pines, all the hotels had them.
Okay.
And they would have, they had their convention, and they tipped you with money and booze. And you might get a shot or a beer after every.
Really?
And at the end of the day, you were doing good.
Do you remember some of the performers who you saw there, or?
I remember seeing Eartha Kitt Bomb and Chubby Checker. He was good.
Eartha Kitt
came on stage and she was drunk.
Oh, that's sad.
And George Gilbert booked the cast of Annie every summer, and the cast came up to the hotel for 4 days and they did a performance at night. That was interesting.
That's fun.
Never really went to the shows.
Yeah, you weren't a big show guy. Yeah.
That was with my friend Ron. My friend Ron, one time, he came up to the hotel with me and when there were senior citizens there, and there was a comedian up there, and he was telling jokes, and the room was, you could hear a pin drop. And my friend had this big booming voice. He was a presidential guard in the Marines. So he's a big guy with a big booming voice.
Oh my goodness.
He told this joke and it was dead silent. And he yells out, "Ha ha ha, I get that." And everybody in the nightclub turned around and looked at us, and I said, "Okay, Ron, let's get out of here. We have to back down the fire escape." But I remember one time I was during one of those big check-ins, and there was a I hear a guy yelling in the front, and I look over. I see my dad standing there with his hands folded, listening to him. So I went over. I hid behind a column, and he's apparently his car was scratched in the parking lot, and he was complaining. And so, finally the guy said to my dad, he said, "Well, what are you going to do about it?" My father said, "Well, it could have been worse." The guy's like yells, "What do you mean it could have been worse?" And he could have, my father said, "Well, it could have been my car," and he walked away. But he meant it though, because no, it was very particular. He kept his car really nice. And the guy was just, "What?" I asked my father about that later on. He said a lot of times people would come up and they would have a scratch in the car and they want the hotel to pay for it.
Yeah. Well, so what were the clients like? What was the clientele like at the Raleigh?
Oh, mostly really nice people.
Yeah.
You met a lot of the same people over year after year. You got to know them.
But you got fired apparently for 2 days.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah. So talk about that.
Yeah. So it was, I think, New Year's Eve. There was, we did our breakfast, we did our lunch. There was a cocktail party, which we could talk about. Those are fun.
Yeah.
Good staff. And then there was an early dinner and then a dinner with a New Year's celebration, which we had no idea. We did dinner. We was like ready to go home. And I said, "Okay, set up for the final dinner with the New Year's celebration." I'm like, "What?" So we did that. And we had a table that we had, I think we had three, we probably had about 50 some odd guests with three or four tables. One table was, they'd been drinking a lot. And there was one really obnoxious guy.
Oh, no.
It was steak night. So he ordered a steak and showing off. He said, "Oh, Dennis, this is too rare. Bring me another one." Dennis got him one. This is Dennis. I worked with my friend Dennis. I'll talk about him. He was a character.
Oh, okay. For sure.
And so Dennis brought him another one. "Dennis, it's too well done. Give me another one." So Dennis got one more steak and he had some complaint about that one.
So Dennis, this is already two steaks
is the third
for.
Steak.
Okay.
And the guy's drunk and we're tired. Dennis took the plate in front of him, dumped it on the floor, dug his heel into it, twisted his heel into it, put the plate on the table, picked the meat up with his hand, slapped it on the plate and said, "Eat it." We got fired.
Good for him.
Al Shiner was the head waiter. Nice guy, tough guy. And I always think that he was laughing when he was firing us in the back of his mind. And but we were low on staff. So as soon as those guests left, we got rehired back.
You were reinstated.
Dennis's father was the head chef. Dennis's father was the pantry chef and his uncle was the head chef. So
the firing wouldn't have stuck.
Oh, no, that would have stuck.
Really? Okay.
Al ran the dining room. The thing that helped us having his uncle as the chef is that on steak nights, Dennis would come to me after the meal was over and most of the people left the dining room and said, "Gary, look what I got." He had some nice steaks.
Oh, my God. So, you know, I hope that man one day got his perfect steak wherever he might be. Talk to me about Dennis. You've brought him up a few times.
Yeah. So, he was, like I said, his father was the pantry chef and we were good friends and he lived in Monticello. And
do you keep in touch with him or?
I lost touch with him. Last I heard he was in Arizona.
All right. And, internet's a cool place. You never know.
If anybody knows how to get in touch with him, I'd love to say hello to him again.
Do you know last names or?
Dennis Van, V-A-N.
Dennis Van. Yeah. Who knows? You never know.
Yeah. There was a waitress, Bess, who, she was, she was mean.
Oh, okay. we don't want to hear from Bess. We'll hear from Dennis. Joking.
We were sitting there before lunch and Bess came in with her. She said, "I got this cake. Nobody touch it." She had a smoker voice.
She was a smoker. And, yeah.
So we were sitting there like, "Oh, don't worry. We're not going to touch it." Bess, Dennis is leaning back in his chair. He fell over the back of the chair and landed on the cake. It was in a box. So we straightened out the box and it all kept quiet.
Until the grand opening.
Yeah. And I remember one summer that I think was the last summer that we worked together. Because we were all doing that new things and finishing college and stuff like that. And
this must have been good for you to, like, you know, to save money and save money for college too. Right?
Yeah, you made a lot of money. Well, yeah. Other people made more money than us. We weren't very good.
Oh. Well, at least you're on. But it sounds like you had a good time too, right? I mean, yeah, it wasn't just a job for you. It was also a way to be social.
Yeah, and I really cared about the hotel. And I was always looking for trying to, like, for example, as a bellhop, people went in and did their job. I always looked, because we had the keys and stuff. We had the keys. And when things were slow, I would go through and find every place, every room that was getting low on keys and go down to the maintenance shop and make new keys. So when we had a check-in, we didn't have guests saying, I don't have enough keys, and so on and so forth. So, you know, I care about that. And I would look after the lobby and...
Did I see there was a murder at the Raleigh?
Maybe. Yeah, there was...
Okay, there might have been a murder at the Raleigh.
Yeah, I was working.
Are you allowed to talk about it? Do you know where the bodies are buried?
I was working late shift, probably till about 3 a.m. And at 2 a.m. it was really quiet. And I was working as a bellhop, and two guys came in, no luggage, kind of tough guys, and they got a room. The next day, only one checked out, and he was gone in the morning. And there was a dead guy. They said it was a heart attack. But never really heard much about it. And the night before,
they didn't investigate or anything, or
I never really looked. I never heard much more about it. There was no internet. So, I never saw the local paper. But that night before, Paul Castellano had been killed in New York City.
Interesting. Do you think there was, like, a relation, or?
They both had similar accents. They
were talking. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, that's a crazy story. Any other crazy stories that happened while you were there?
I could tell you an embarrassing one.
Okay, tell me an embarrassing one.
That one summer, in the beginning, we had, I think we worked about 6 weeks, no breaks. Then you work your breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Breakfast, we came in for breakfast around 6 a.m. Set up for 7 o'clock breakfast, done around 10:30. Cleaning up, you're done around 11. So you have about an hour to get ready for lunch. So often we sleep under the tables or go to the arcade and play Space Invaders.
Nice.
And then dinner, you, so then you had, and after lunch, you done around 3. So you had about 2 hours, 3 hours to yourself. And then you had to be in for 6 p.m. for a 7 p.m. dinner. Then you're done at 9:30 or so, hopefully.
Yeah.
So it was long, long hours. There was at that time, we had worked about 6 weeks straight like that. And you had to pay someone to come in. There was somebody that floated, and you had to pay them to take your shift.
Mm-hmm.
You might have to pay them like $50, $60. And back then that was a lot of money.
Yeah.
So, it was lunch, and Dennis had paid this one waitress Best to take his shift, and I was paying her to take my dinner shift.
Okay, and, so she's raking it in.
Yeah, and she was a good waitress, and I was dreading it because she was so good, and I was not good. So, for example, when she was coming out with the soups, you better well have those appetizers cleared.
So
I saw her coming out of the kitchen with a tray of soups, and I'm like, oh, God. I haven't cleaned the table yet. So I went over, I started clearing everything. And there's one person, and I was looking at the juice, and I was going to ask her if I could take her dish. And I said, excuse me, ma'am, can I take your douche?
Oh, no.
There were three really nice families there, all staring at me with their mouths open. And I said, oh, your juice. And I just took it and left. The rest of the meal sitting in the ice room in the kitchen. Every time I tried to say something to someone, I just started bursting out laughing.
Oh.
And couldn't talk. And then my sister was at the outdoor pool that afternoon.
Did your sister work there too? Or
yeah, she had a a real cushy job. She's going to get mad at me for saying that.
Oh, okay.
She knows it. She handed out keys to the car hops.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So my sister said she was sitting, she said, oh, I was sitting at the outdoor pool. And this lady said, the strangest thing happened at lunch today. And my sister said, oh, that was my brother.
That's funny. No protection, unfortunately. So how long did you work at the Raleigh? And when, do you remember how old you were when it was like your last summer?
So I worked at the Raleigh. But I was at the Raleigh too young to work from 73 on. Then I started doing those odd jobs like the switchboard, the spotlight, night patrol.
Yeah. So
when I was 16, I could probably work there. And then 17, I think I could work nights. And I probably finished working there in 84.
Yeah.
I would come home and work the work Christmas and New Year's and stuff like that and different holidays also.
And you didn't want to come back and or stay in the hotels? Because sometimes
I didn't. When sometimes I'd say, hey, Dad, any open rooms? And he would give me a room, maybe the Sammy Davis wing or something like that. And I'd stay there. And sometimes I would come up with a friend and we would do that. So that was always good. And if there was something open, we just stayed there.
And how long did your dad work at the Raleigh till?
Probably till about 2008, maybe 2008, I'm kind of guessing. No, earlier than that, I think it was 2006. And then he was at Kutcher's for a little while. He knew Mark Kutcher for a long time. And he saw that the hotel was going to be closing soon. So he talked to Mark about that also. And then he left that and went semi-retired to the Hudson Valley Resort, which is the Granite, and then finally retired.
Okay. Like, did you know in the moment that it was changing that it wasn't becoming the hotspot that it was? Or were you just too in it to realize what was happening?
No, I would see the, in the late 80s, middle 80s, I would see that the senior citizens started a little bit before or coming a little bit later and a little bit earlier in the beginning of the summer.
Yeah.
I see changes there. Although I knew it was good for my dad because he booked all of them.
Yeah.
But I could see those changes happening.
Because people talk a lot about the decline of the Borscht Belt, and there's different arguments about the exact time. I mean, because I went there when I was as a kid in the late 80s, early 90s. That's I went to Kutcher's, and I wouldn't have ever have known that it had been going through a decline because it was busy and, you know, it was fun.
Yeah, you would never see it at the Raleigh because Manny Halbert started out in maintenance at the Raleigh. I mean, they had a top-notch maintenance crew. They built the seven-story Kennedy wing themselves.
Wow.
So that's how capable they were.
And it's still there.
It's still there, yeah.
Does it operate in the summers? Like,
it's open all year round. There's a video somebody went through about in 2014 with a camera, and it's really interesting to look at.
Interesting. Yeah, I'll have to. I saw you sent that to me. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. Because the Raleigh had its own maintenance staff up until the last day, that hotel was in tip-top shape.
Okay.
Because it didn't cost them anything to run maintenance. It cost them stuff not to run maintenance. They didn't have to contract out to a third party to fix whatever. They
had interesting.
Yeah. And Manny's wife, originally Nettie Halbert, ran the front office. When she passed away, Manny Halbert took the front office.
Okay.
He was an interesting guy.
Yeah.
The worst thing you ever wanted to happen when you were in the dining room was he was standing there in the dining room the whole time with the suit and tie watching. Smart guy. Because that's where the money's lost.
Right.
That in the bar. And so the worst thing that could happen was you have a tap in the shoulder, you hear, what are you doing? And you're like, oh God, Manny, Mr. Halbert's behind you. So I remember one time there was some guest.
But that's smart. That's the smart way to run a business, especially, to know what's going on in your own business. It's just not like that anymore.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I remember one time some guest asked me for some postum. I said, I don't know what that is.
So I just had to recently look it up too. So.
So he said, the guy said, he was a real nice guy. He said, just go in the pantry. You'll look around. You'll look next to the sink. You'll find it. So I went in there and I saw it. I go, I'll be damned. Look at that. This postum. So I started reading the back of it. And I feel my tap, tap. What are you doing? I'm like, oh God. Yeah. Oh, hi, Mr. Halbert. He said, what are you doing? I said, oh, some guests asked me for some Sanka. I mean, some postum. And so I wanted to just see what it was. I didn't know what it was. He said, well, go outside and find out from them what they want. I wasn't going to go back to the guest and say, what do you want again? So I just stood in the dining room for about 2 minutes and I came back and I said, oh, Mr. Halbert, they wanted the postum definitely. I said, yeah. Okay.
So you're also one of the, I mean, I don't want to say the few people, because I talk to people who live still in the area, but you take your family to the Villa Roma, right?
Yeah.
You talk a little bit about why you go there and by the way, where do you live? Do you live in New York or?
I live in Northwestern New Jersey.
Oh, okay. You're in New Jersey.
I grew up
okay.
in Middletown. I grew up in Middletown.
Okay. And you're in New Jersey now.
Yeah. Okay. Like I said, my father knew a lot of people, and the guy who's a manager of the Villa Roma right now, my father knew really well, and I met him. And he said, he gave me his card and said, come up sometime. So
how many times have you gone with your family?
We almost went twice, but we were all sick last year, last winter. So we didn't go, so we canceled, but we're good. We have reservations for July.
Nice. How long do you go?
We just go for a couple of days.
Yeah.
And it's really nice there. It's it gives you a feel of the Catskill Hotel. It's got the modified American plan.
Yeah.
They don't have any old buildings left. But then again, the Raleigh didn't have any old buildings either.
Yeah.
And I actually met, when I was there, I met two guys I used to work with at the Raleigh in the dining room. We sat there talking and they, each of them at separate times came over and they told me, they said, you know, your dad was a real nice guy. He treated me really good. And I had a certain problem I needed to take care of, he helped me. And my dad always brought people with him. So from Shawanga to the DeVille to the other hotels, for example, Bob Engel was the athletic director. He brought him with him, some band people. Margaret, who ran the switchboard at Shawanga, he brought to the DeVille. And then she went on with my life after that. Back then, not only did she run the switchboard, but she also wrote the menus and printed them. They had these big printing machines in the back of the office. And I remember one time she made a mistake at the on the menu at the DeVille, and she wrote no dog owners allowed in the indoor pool. So they had to make an announcement on the PA system in the dining room saying dog owners are in fact allowed in the pool. Not just the dogs are not allowed. But so my dad brought people all along with him, and I mean, there was even the case at Shawanga. One of the bellhops did a hit and run. He took the hotel car. There was a bar. If you left the hotel and made a left going down towards Bloomingburg, there was a bar right near where the old train station was. Right now, it's a house. And he took the car one evening and drove down to the bar and hit a car and did a hit and run, and he came back. And got a lot of trouble. The police were there. And
oh, no.
I remember going in my dad's office and he was sitting there. It was very serious looking. And he looked at me with a scared laugh. And I said, time for me to go. I'm just a kid. But my father and my uncle Alvin worked it out with the police and all the other people. And he kept his job.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's impressive.
Not only did he keep his job, but my father probably realized, he's a kid. He made a mistake and he learned his lesson.
Yeah.
And he forgave him, and he actually brought him along to the DeVille, and I think he was the bellhop, the service manager at the DeVille.
Oh, well, there you go. So
and later on he had a furniture shop in a furniture store in Middletown, and that's where I got all my furniture for my house.
Amazing. Yeah.
But
so do you think there could be one more Borscht Belt themed resort that could open up? And would you be a champion of it?
It would be different, though. You'd have to run the hotels more. I mean, back then the hotels, the staff was mixed in with the guests.
Yeah.
If you go to, for example, the Cartwright, which is on the old Concord property, the staff does not mix with the guests. Back then that was just part of it.
Do you think that's just how things are now, or how they make those rules?
Probably how they make the rules.
Yeah.
I mean, the staff also was, especially with the hotels open only in the summer, you had a different type of staff as opposed to people that were all year round.
Yeah.
I mean, at Mambo Night at the Raleigh, there was staff from all different hotels there.
And the
the staff from the Raleigh.
Yeah.
And so if you wanted to run a hotel now, you wouldn't be able to do the dining rooms where it's you just go in and eat family style. You'd have to have a paid dining room where you just go in and order from the menu.
Mm-hmm.
The Villa Roma is successful. I mean, they do it that way. They have a dining room where you just go in, you have breakfast and lunch there. It's not all you can eat. You pick off the menu and that's that.
Yeah, that's the other thing. No more, one for me, and some for the table. You can't do that anymore.
Yeah, they have a nightclub. They don't have the big shows like they used to do. They have, maybe they do. Maybe it was just because of the situation recently.
Yeah.
I'll find out more when I go in July. I'll let you know.
I know. I want a full report.
But it's a nice Catskill type of crowd that goes there, and the people that go to the Villa Roma go year after year.
Nice.
You don't see you're not going to see the season's guests like you used to because it's just too expensive.
For sure.
Yeah, but it could happen in a different level.
Who knows? Only time will tell. So where can people learn more about Shawanga, and what do you have planned for the website?
If you look up shawanga.com, shawanga.com, enjoy the pictures. If you have a story to tell, just send it to me and I'll put it up there. I put some stories up there. My aunt gave me a really, really good story that's up there about... And there's a lot of pictures up there and a lot of information on each of the pictures. So I just hope people enjoy it. And there's so much history in that website too.
Definitely. It's a beautiful website. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Oh, you're welcome. It was a pleasure.
Very special thank you to Gary for coming on the show. I expect a full report from your vacation at Villa Roma. If you want to learn more about Shawanga Lodge, please head to shawanga.com. That's shawanga.com. Together, along with his late father, Abby, there are over 1,100 pictures, many of them detailed, some of the descriptions his family wrote, and others are memories from many, many conversations with family members that they've had over the years. And if you have any questions, comments, or have pictures or stories to share with Gary, contact him through the website, and he will be happy to hear from you. New episodes of the Borscht Belt Tattler podcast drop every Monday. Do you love what we're doing? Do you want to help? Here's what you can do to help us in our mission to keep the Borscht Belt alive. So first things first, follow us on socials. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Borscht Belt Pod. Subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss upcoming episodes. Leave us a rating and review. Feedback is important. And let others know, and me, how I'm doing. Consider buying us a coffee and leaving a tip, which will help us produce future high quality and free content. It's super easy. Head to www.buymeacoffee.com/Borscht Belt Pod. Keep it safe, keep it fun, keep it kosher. See you next week.